Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, and one of my HOCO homies, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Fresh season, Dixie, let's get it. Yo, what is up, Mark Dixon?
I was afraid you're going to throw your arm out on that whip. You came heavy.
I'm excited. It's a new dawning of the 2020-23 season, Dix. And just so people, if you are a first-time listener, my name is Dan Flynn. I worked at Inside Lacrosse for a long time. Prior to that, I worked in college athletics at some really good lacrosse schools and never played. Grew up in Delaware in the 80s when it wasn't a popular thing to do. But I went to Hopkins. That's where I met my partner in crime here, Mark Dixon.
And what did you do at Hopkins athletically?
Well, I played football and baseball my freshman year, and I got a varsity letter in track and field for high jump as a senior.
White Stone.
More like White Stone. I didn't jump very high at all, but I still got a varsity letter and won points and meets for and representing my school. So I was proud of that. And that's always a fun story to tell how I got that. So met Dix in college, and we've been buddies since then. And we've been doing this for 6 or 7 years. Is this season 6, season 7?
I would honestly have to go back and count. I've lost count at this point, but a number of years.
Yeah, and we have a great show, including a first-time guest. First-time college coach Kevin Corrigan from Notre Dame will be joining us in a little bit to talk about his season and how he's preparing. And just he's been there for 35 years. So a lot of just how college athletics has changed and, his time at Notre Dame. But, Dix, let's start where when we last spoke in this forum, it was before Thanksgiving, and you were telling us about a devastating pickleball injury that you suffered. How is your health? How is your Achilles? Are you back up and moving around?
I'm doing well. I got my boot off last week. So I had surgery November 2nd, if you guys recall. And then I just got my boot off last week, which would have been January 26th. So yeah, I'm getting after it. Shout out to Herlong Physical Therapy in Marysville out of the Campanero Strength and Conditioning Dojo. Really being aggressive with it. I'm walking well. I'm, getting my spring back, if you will, calf muscle, all that good stuff. So everything is trending in a positive direction.
That's awesome. Well, there are a bunch of games on the slate. That's why we're back doing our weekend preview podcast for Inside Lacrosse. Before we get to the big games of the weekend and our interview, let's first set the table for the 2023 season. We have a few new programs. Lindenwood and Queens joined the Division I ranks up from Division II. And amongst them joining, there was a lot of conference realignment, a lot of shuffling that took place. What are some of the new rule changes or things that fans need to know as they start watching college games this weekend?
So, a little bit of a tweak in the rules. So the Goalmouth has become sort of that, pit of lava that you can't fall in order to score a goal. But one adjustment to the rule is, and what we saw over the last few years was teams intentionally blowing up guys that are scoring goals so they land in the Goalmouth and the team would get a penalty, but the goal would be wiped off of the board. Now that goal counts. And you won't get, and they really, the rules committee and our leadership and NILOA was really encouraging officials to go 1, 2, maybe even 3 minute variety instead of just a 30-second push for unnecessary roughness, illegal body check, locking these penalties in for full-time service. That will still exist. But now if you railroad a kid from behind or you drill them into the goal or the goalie, that goal is going to count and you are going to go a man down. So instead of just going a man down without giving up the goal, it's double jeopardy there. You're giving up a goal and you're man down. In all likelihood, it would probably be a dead ball foul, no face off and automatic possession to the offended team. So that's something to keep an eye on. Points of emphasis, sportsmanship, pregame. as well as halftime and after the game. And then more of an emphasis, you know, so many two-man games happening in our sport, especially on the wings and then behind the cage, you know, illegal picks and screens are a point of emphasis this year as well.
Another topic we got to touch on, Dix, that happens every year, but is the coaching changes at the Division I level. This year, there were 9 coaching changes, including our old friend, Hopkins player, former assistant, former Maryland assistant, Bobby Benson, gets his first head coaching gig at Providence.
Yeah, congratulations to Bobby. And Providence is a place that has a lot of meaning to the Benson family. His wife graduated from Providence and is, I believe, is on a board there. I can't remember what board she serves on. But Bobby, when he was at Johns Hopkins, had the opportunity to take, you know, interview for some head coaching jobs. It just never quite was the right fit. But Providence seems to be a great fit. And also now Coach Benson can like relocate and actually live with his family, because for the last 2 years, his family was in Atlanta. He was up in College Park. He'd fly home after games on most of the time Saturdays. God forbid Maryland played on a Sunday night on BTN. But then he would, you know, spend Sunday with his family and then fly back to College Park Sunday night or Monday morning to get back to work for the next week's game. So, you know, congratulations to Coach Benson.
Any other coaching changes of those 9 that jump out at you?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Turry, longtime Michigan assistant going to St. John's. My family, we got to know Justin through the recruiting process, and just a really great guy, really sharp guy, very down to earth. You've got Jordan Levine, who led Mercy to the Division II national championship game last year against the University of Tampa. And gave that squad all they could handle. He goes to Long Island University. Brad Ross, who been offensive coordinator at Ohio State when they went to the national championship game in 2017, held that same role the last couple of years at Navy. He takes over at Bryant for his former – did Brad play for Mike Pressler? I think he did play for Mike Pressler. Yeah, his former coach in college. So he takes over the Bulldogs. So those are the ones that really jump out at me. Chad Sermon leaves Mercer to he'll be the leader of that Iona program, which starts next year in 2024. Some guys that get their feet wet this weekend, get underway as head coaches, and some people have to wait another 12 months or so.
Those are the new head coaches. One big story that emerged in this preseason is one legend is going to retire at the end of this year. Bill Tierney, legendary coach at Princeton and Denver, is going to step down after this season. And, friend of our podcast, a great advocate and champion for the sport, and wishing him well in his last season at the helm of the Pioneers.
I mean, just unbelievable when you think about, first and foremost, like he could have been my coach at Johns Hopkins. He was in the running, when Don Zimmerman stepped down but elected to stay at Princeton. And I remember back then you were kind of like, why would you do that? You know, well, I think we found out why. 6 national championships in a program when he took it over had never won or been to the NCAA tournament or won an NCAA tournament game or, you know, never won an Ivy League championship. And then, you know, he kind of, turns the lacrosse world on its head when he goes out west to Denver. And what does he do? He makes them a perennial national semifinalist, and then wins the national championship in 2015. But, you know, the coaching aside, you know, Coach Tierney is somebody who's become a trusted friend of me and my family. My younger son, Owen, was a huge Denver fan growing up. Bill allowed him to tag along with the team in that championship weekend in 2015. He had breakfast with those guys, and when they won the semifinal game against Notre Dame in overtime, they were like, you're our good luck charm. So you have to be at, you know, breakfast with us every day. So Owen did that. He got Wes Berg's shoulder pads after they won the championship game, and he wore them for 6 years, only changing when his high school teammate Peter Lake was hit in the chest. I went to commotio cordis, went to cardiac arrest, and mom made him get a new pair of shoulder pads. And just somebody who's always been someone that I could turn to get advice, you know, for my kids in recruiting, you know, me as a broadcaster, me as a lacrosse referee, and, you know, just a guy that I've really enjoyed getting to know. So I hope he has a season fitting for how much he's given to the sport and what he means to lacrosse. But I think he alluded to in a couple of interviews, like, he's not going to go too far away from the game. He'll still be involved, and lacrosse will be better for it.
Yeah, well said. Fine tribute there, Dix. But it's a great segue into our interview today. As we mentioned from at the top, Kevin Corrigan, head coach of Notre Dame, is going to join us. A longtime coach at Notre Dame. His 321 wins at Notre Dame, the most of any coach at any Division I program. And he'll be joining us right now. Please welcome into the show Notre Dame head coach Kevin Corrigan, about to start his 31st season. Coach Corrigan is the longest active tenured coach in Division I men's lacrosse. Coach, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, no problem. But it's 35, not 31. 35th.
35 season. Years.
Yeah.
35. Yeah,
we're all trying to deny, Coach, that we're getting older and it's been this amount of time and that amount of time. When I started officiating back in 1999, probably through maybe like 2011-ish, 12-ish, when I would get a call from an assigner looking for a game, they're looking for a good young official. And now when I get the call, they're looking for a good official. So at least I still have the good part going.
There you go.
So Coach, thank you so much for joining us. Another season's upon us, kind of hard to believe when you think about how time flies. I know it's not the most best memory, but if you could rewind for us to last year, end of the regular season, Selection Sunday, when Notre Dame was not mentioned for the NCAA tournament. What was the initial reaction as the dust kind of settled and you could get a hold of your emotions, your team's emotions, and that kind of thing? What was the feeling last May in that locker room when Notre Dame wasn't invited to the NCAA tournament?
Well, more than anything else, I think all of us felt for the guys that were not going to have another chance to come back and do that. You know, we felt like they had earned that right. We were disappointed that it didn't work out that way. And you're looking at guys like Wheaton, Jackaboys, and going, wow, this is how your career is going to end. We always wanted his career to end on a win, because you don't get to do that, you know, very often when you're in the tournament every year. You don't end on a win unless you win it all. So he got to go out with a win, but it wasn't the way we hoped.
And him, how has that
him and Arden and that whole class of seniors? It was
sure
more than anything else. You know, everybody was disappointed, but mostly upset for those guys.
Great group of players. What motivation has that provided, or focus has that provided to the 2023 edition of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
You know, Mark, I don't want to overplay it, because in all honesty, you know, one of my mantras has always been, last year's last year. This is a whole new team. There's a quarter of the room, at least, is new. They don't know or care about last year in the sense of they don't use that as motivation for themselves. And nor is it the focus on anything that happened in the past going to do this team any good. And we feel that way, whether we feel like we had a great year and played for the national championship, or whether we feel like we had a disappointing year. It's always turn the page. It's the next year. I'm not going to lie. I'm sure every one of our guys is motivated in a sense that was in that locker room at that moment, you know, that motivated by the disappointment and the reality that we hadn't, you know, convinced that committee. But we don't talk about it. We don't think about it in terms of a broader, you know, thing. We're not going to go through the year talking about last year. We're going to stay focused on what's in front of us.
This year, your 35th year in charge of the Notre Dame lacrosse program, when you took this job 35 years ago, what were your initial thoughts in terms of building out the program? And did you still think you would be wearing the gold Golden Blue talking to us about Notre Dame lacrosse as the leader of that program 35 years later?
Well, I don't think anybody when they're 29 years old thinks about what am I going to be doing when I'm 64? You know, like, I wonder what that'll look like, you know, like, I don't think you have that thought. So I never had any thought of that anywhere along the way. I never tried to look again. The thing about college sports or just being in sports as your sole profession, it's all about this year. And then it's not, and it's all about the next year. It's never about last year. It's never about 10 years in the future, short of you're trying to build, you know, a program that has resources and that has a culture and everything that can sustain itself. But you're not thinking in terms of, you know, 10 years down the road or much less 35 years down the road.
Sure.
But I had plenty to do on day one in South Bend, you know, in terms of just going out and you know, trying to find as many good players as we could to come to South Bend and trying to build a something that we felt like, hey, listen, we start with two great things. We start with a great university that can attract people. And we started with a great group of kids. And when I got here, I quickly found out, you know, that we had a tremendous group of kids. We just need to find guys just like them that could play a little bit better.
And you've been able to do that, obviously, in your tenure at Notre Dame, to the point where Notre Dame is viewed as one of the special programs in college lacrosse. What are you most proud of at this stage of your career when you look back at your body of work? I know you go season to season, and 2023 is first on your mind at this point in time, but if you can reflect at all, what are you most proud of?
I'm just proud to have been part of the group of guys that have come through this place. I mean, I just had a great weekend here. We had a coaches clinic, and our women's team had a play day for recruits. And between the two of them, I had about six of my former players here, either as parents or coaches or you know, running adrenaline, and just knowing those guys, seeing the men that they are today, the husbands and fathers and leaders and you know, I mean, you know, Todd Rassis is protecting the president. Alex Cade is the CEO of his own company. You know, I mean, just, you know, Greg Glenday is the CEO of his company. You know, you're just looking at these guys and you know, to a man, they've all just, you know, make you proud. And for me to have been associated with them and had a chance to be part of their lives, you know, 35 years ago or 30 years ago or 10 years ago is without question the highlight for me.
Coach, you've seen, witnessed a lot of change in college sports in your time, and especially in the last decade, it's changed a lot. And one of those is the transfer portal. Notre Dame has been successful pulling in really talented players, and it's been a big change. You know, guys just have to sit out a year, or, you know, programs might only take guys who could have a few years of eligibility left. We've seen a change across college sports, not just in lacrosse, but in many other sports. In general, how has that changed your approach in coaching in terms of team building, recruiting, and building chemistry for a team as you enter a season?
Well, first of all, you know, when we saw this coming, and we didn't, it's not like we saw it coming years down the road. I think we all knew a sea change was coming years down the road. We just didn't know what it was going to look like. And then when it got here, you know, the first thing you got to do is, hey, you know, am I going to be the old guy talking about how it used to be? And, oh, this is different. Or am I going to be the guy that says, hey, I got 35 years or 30 years of experience. I should be able to do this as well as anybody, right? I mean, I should be equipped to do this well. And our university should be in a position to do it well. And so, you know, we embraced it rather than fought it right from the beginning. But to your point that you alluded to, you have to be careful with the culture of your team. If you feel like you've got a great culture, you have to be very cognizant of what is the impact going to be. So it starts with make sure you're bringing in the right people. And I think we've brought in not just great people, great guys from great programs. And I give credit to the coaches of the programs that those guys were in, that they, you know, that they ran terrific programs. These guys were you know, we're not having to change the mindset of these guys. We're just trying to get them to adapt to our culture a little bit. And then, you know, making sure that you don't bring in so many guys that your team is affected by them more than they're affected by your team. You know, again, we've had guys, and we've always valued the fact that we don't lose many guys in this program. We don't have guys quit. We don't have guys transfer. That's a point of pride for all of us that we formed this bond that's meaningful for everybody in the room. And so we want to make sure that the guys come in, feel like the guys in the room already do. It's an honor to be part of that. It's a privilege to be part of that. And they're willing to kind of take the responsibility for doing what they need to do to continue to be a positive part of that culture and everything else. So we've been fortunate. The guys we've had have been great, to a man. And you know, we started getting grad transfers a few years ago, like about 10 years ago, right? And the first guy we got was a guy named Edison Parzanese, who came from Holy Cross. Edison was an attackman there. He was, I think, their all-time leading scorer when he left Holy Cross, right? So he came here. We had expectations for him. He had expectations. It turned out that he really didn't play much for us. And yet he was a terrific teammate. He remains a valued part of our program. We see him every year when we take our guys to New York, and he helps our guys get jobs and on Wall Street. So we were already in the business a little bit of inviting those guys. Carson Milliken and Carl Walrath from Virginia came in. We had these kind of guys coming in a while ago, before this became more of a thing with the COVID eligibility and with, everybody talks about the portal. The portal's always been there in lacrosse. You were always free to transfer in lacrosse and play the next day, as long as you got a release. And there weren't very many releases being denied in our sport. So really, you know, it was for us not that crazy of a thing to adapt and have these new guys coming in. And we had seen how guys could do it and do it well and be great team members and everything, you know, as they went through that extra year or so.
Can I ask you about two guys in particular who joined your team as grad transfers? Chris Fake and Brian Tevlin come from Yale. They're older, seasoned All-Americans, national championship game experience. Tevlin was even a two-time captain at Yale. What kind of leadership and other qualities did they bring to your team this year?
You know, to start with, and almost surprisingly to me, but not really in getting to know them, but at the beginning, humility. Both of those guys, they didn't come in saying, "Hey, I got to show you guys how this is done," you know, kind of thing. They came in and said, "Man, I want to learn what's going on here. I want to serve these guys that are here and see if I can contribute." And so they've been terrific in terms of being coachable. They've been terrific in terms of being great teammates, not trying to be leaders, but acting as leaders act, you know. And that was, I think, a really great thing for everybody. And you know, so I commend them for that. And like I say, I always, you know, you can't do that without looking back and saying these guys have been with people who have the right idea about things.
A name that is synonymous with Notre Dame lacrosse is Kavanaugh. And you've got brothers on the team right now. But Matt Kavanaugh was your first Kavanaugh that you got. Take us back to that recruiting process, and you got Kavanaugh on campus and played, had a great career in South Bend. And then subsequently, how does that lead to that Kavanaugh pipeline?
You know, a big part of it is there's a great match between the Kavanaughs and Notre Dame. You know, they're from a strong Catholic family that values so many of the things that are fundamental things about Notre Dame. And so I don't want to say that the attraction was playing for us or anything as much as it was. I think Notre Dame really was right in their swing plane. And that started with Matt. And Matt had to jump through a few hoops to get here. And we knew then that we had a kid that was a little bit special in the sense that you don't find many guys when they can jump off and go, "Hey, there's an off ramp right here, and I can go to just about anywhere I want to go." And I've got an easy off ramp right here to do that. And they don't take it. They stay and they commit to this thing that they value and that they wanted. And that's what Matt did. And I think that influenced our program in a huge way. It influenced his brothers in a huge way. And so I think they grew up, you know, thinking the same way. And you know, we were very competitive in the years Matt was here. And so those guys knew they were going to play, you know, the best schedule in the country, play the best teams in the country, you know, have a chance to win a championship every year. That's, you know, that's what they wanted, that and a Notre Dame education.
One of your assistant coaches is Ryder Garnsey, and Ryder had a colorful Notre Dame career during his playing days, well-publicized career. Describe his evolution as a player, as a person, and how he eventually landed as part of your coaching staff.
I think there's probably a narrative out there that somehow Ryder and I didn't disagree. I think it started even when he was in high school. Like, oh, man, how is he going to play for Kevin? Kevin loves fundamentals and Ryder loves, you know, falling down behind the back shots. I love good, smart, hardworking lacrosse players and good kids, you know, and good people. And Ryder's been all of that all along. To say that he was not fundamentally sound is to kind of miss a lot of the things that he always did, you know, so I don't think that narrative was exactly right to start with. Secondly, Ryder had to go through maturing as a young man the same way everybody does from 17 to you know, what is he now, 25, you know, I mean, I look back at the dumb things that I did from 17 to 25, and thank God nobody mostly knows about those at this point. But, you know, my brothers and sisters remind me of it all the time, you know, I mean, it's not lost completely, but, you know, so listen, Ryder's a great person, always has been, from a great family, always been a hard worker, always cared passionately about his team and his teammates, and being, you know, wanted to be great. Awful lot of good things to work with there. And, you know, and you go through the journey with every guy as he, you know, evolves and matures. And I couldn't be more happy that Ryder's still here, still loves being part of our program, is terrific young coach, doing a great job for us. Just, you know, couldn't be happier with where we are in that journey right now.
Coach, I want to give you a chance to talk about your senior goalkeeper, Liam Entman. He anchors your defense, continues a great tradition of strong goalkeeper play at Notre Dame. You obviously must have a lot of trust in him. He started every game since he's been in South Bend. What advantage does having a veteran goalkeeper like that, as you enter a season, knowing you can trust the guy back there and work your defense around him? And what other qualities does he bring to the team?
You know, the biggest thing is that he's a competitor. He competes on every shot. And I'm talking about on Tuesday afternoon's practice, just the same way as on Saturday. Right. And so our guys kind of know what they're going to get with Liam. You know, he has their full faith and trust. Because of how much he cares and you know how hard he works to be good. Again, he's gone through a growth process. You know, his first year stopping the ball, maybe not always gathering as many balls as he stopped, and maybe not as active part of the communication of the defense as you might like. Maybe not as good an understanding of the riding and clearing game and some of those things. But you know, as the year's gone on, he's and also probably not, as any young goaltender, not as emotionally mature as he is, you know, later. And that makes a big difference in the way they handle, you know, the inevitable ups and downs, because there's not many guys pitching shutouts, you know, in the goal and at this level. So you're, you know, even on your best day, you've got some disappointments, right? But so learning how to handle that, all of that, it's just been with Liam, it's been an easy trip because he cared so much and worked so hard and had the trust of his teammates. And he's getting better. I mean, because of all that, he just continues to improve. And, you know, he's never played better that I've seen than he is right now.
Definitely want to dive into your schedule, Coach. One team I don't see on it just yet, Harvard, where your son Will is coaching. You had the opportunity to coach Will. Now you see him prospering as a coach on another person you're very familiar with, Jerry Burns' staff. What was it like coaching Will? And then what's it like watching him elevate his status throughout the game and doing the job he's doing in Cambridge?
You know, I had a great time coaching Will. It was much harder on Will than it was on me. And you know, he handled that well. He had to bear the brunt of that. And you know, of any decision that I made, it's not like guys were going to, you know, come complaining to me and bitching to me about things. That doesn't mean they weren't bitching and complaining at times. And that's, you know, so that was his to bear. And I think he did it really well. Again, always he stayed focused on, you know, how do I contribute to the team? I don't make the decisions any more than those guys do. So I'm gonna do everything I can to be a good contributor, you know. And I think he's taken that same kind of mentality into coaching, right? I've seen him, you know, his first job was running a high school team and program out in Seattle, Washington for a couple of years, you know, and then he went to Washington and Lee. And coached at the D3 level. And now he's, you know, with Jerry up at Harvard. But all I've ever heard from him when we talk about this is what his role is, how he can learn from his role, how he can get better at executing his role. And he's not focused on the next job, you know, the same way we're talking at the beginning of this, you know, like he's not talking all the time about how this job came open. I've never heard him. He's never brought up another job to me. And in fact, I've been kind of pushing him along a little bit in some of this because he always wanted to stay where he was. He didn't want to leave Seattle because he's like, oh, we got a really good team coming back next year. I'm like, WNL's a great opportunity. It's a great school. It's a great place to coach. I think it'd be a good opportunity for you. And then he eventually made that decision. Same thing with WNL. He didn't want to leave there. And it's like, yeah, but WNL, you know, but Harvard's a great opportunity. Jerry's somebody you're intimately familiar with. This is a great opportunity for you too. And I'm not saying I made any decisions for him. I'm just saying he was always so focused on where he was and what he was doing that he just wanted to get better at that and contribute more in that role. And I think those are the guys that become great coaches because at the end of the day, you know, it's so easy to become distracted by any number of things, right? And, you know, much less as he has just gone through, you get married, you know, you start to have a family, all those things. And you know, it's hard to stay focused and stay in the moment on what you're doing year after year in coaching. So, you know, I think he's kept the right kind of humble attitude about that. How do I serve this team that I'm working with right now, you know?
Coach, keeping on the schedule front, you added a game this year, playing 13 games. You played 12 the last couple of years. I have a question about being a Midwest team, and you just can't drive across town to get a non-conference game or even a short distance away. What are the challenges and the decisions you have to make about scheduling that make it a little bit difficult based on being a team located in your part of the country?
Yeah, that's a great question. But I'll tell you, to the question Mark alluded to a second ago, my wife would shoot me if I had scheduled Harvard, Dixie. There is no way she is going through sitting in the stands at a game unless the NCAA mandates it. You know, we're not going to be playing Harvard. You know, I just don't see that ending well.
Smart man. Yeah. Smart man.
So, no, listen, it is tough to get our schedule together. You know, people always talk about our you know, that we only play so many games. Well, I'll tell you what, send me $100,000. We'll play another game or two. But, you know, it's not that easy, right? It's very expensive. It's time consuming. We have a very restrictive class miss policy at Notre Dame. That means we can't be traveling every weekend. You know, and the same goes for people coming out here, right? The challenges of getting people to come here. So we're always going to play a little bit of maybe a couple fewer games than other people. We really want to stay focused on having a great schedule, which I think we do. I don't think there's anybody that plays more top teams than we do. In the toughest league in the country, we're playing, you know, two top five teams who aren't in our league. So I think, you know, we want to stay focused on quality. We also want to stay focused on playing teams that, are what we, so what we're about. So building game in the Midwest, we're going to always try to play, one or two of the Midwestern teams besides Ohio State and Michigan, obviously now easy staples on our schedule, great opponents. Marquette, Cleveland State, Bellarmine, Detroit Mercy, those schools, we want to make sure we're kind of good partners in Midwestern lacrosse and keep them on the schedule, but we have to keep an eye on our RPI and all that kind of stuff as well. And then we want to play, like-minded schools, the academies. We had Army on the schedule for years. I think we're going to try to pick them back up as we move forward with the ACC next year. We're going to go back to playing four games in a tournament as opposed to playing six games within the conference in the regular season. So it opens up a couple of dates for us. Ivy Leagues would be good schools, and we'll talk to some people and see what we can do with that, But yeah, we're going to try to stay with those kind of like-minded schools, Maryland, Georgetown, Maryland ACC member forever, right? And Georgetown is another Catholic institution, great match for us. So, we it kind of keeps our schedule within a little bit of a range of things because we want to try to tick as many of those boxes as we can while maintaining the quality of the schedule. And trying to be able to afford the schedule year after year because it's tough to travel from South Bend all the time. But fortunately, the university has supported us really well in that. When I came out here, talking about 35 years ago, we bused to every game, right? So we were busing back east on a weekend, Now we're chartering three times this season, to play our games so that our guys don't have to miss class. They don't have to be up till 5 in the morning. They don't have all the challenges of that stuff. We're able to do all that in a first-class manner. So that's you talk about things that have changed over 35 years. I can't think of anything other than that. I think my back still hurts from riding those buses. Our guys used to call it the iron lung. We were in that thing so long.
Coach, really appreciate your time. A couple more questions, a little more on the fun side. So I worked in college athletics for 15 years. One of the best parts is making relationships with other coaches, other programs, other student athletes on different teams. What's one particular team at Notre Dame that you love to go watch play?
Well, I've always loved going to watch our basketball team play. I love basketball. I love college basketball. I grew up with ACC college basketball and my family, my dad was at Virginia for all those years and then with the ACC. And so ACC basketball to me, there's just not much better than that. And here we are in that conference with a guy, Mike Bray, that I've known for, 23 years now. I love going to basketball. I went to Diggers practices. I went to John McLeod's practices. I went to Matt Doherty's practice and the games are similar. So you're 1 minute you're sitting there watching and saying, I wonder if that freshman, can hit the three. And the next minute you got a scrap of paper out and you're charting out some two-man action that they ran or something, that you're like, oh, we can use that. We can do that. Or I like that the backside help defense. I like the way they're teaching that. I like the way they're explaining that to their guys and that's something we can use. So both reasons, I basketball has always been my thing. And that's on the men's side. Obviously, our women's side has been tremendously successful as well and worth watching.
I've always been a Mike Bray fan, too. And, he's decided to step aside after the season. Any thoughts on his tenure at Notre Dame and what he's done with the program?
I think people need to appreciate how hard the job he has is. You talk about the evolution of college sports and things. Mike's been here at a time when Digger was doing it and doing it at a very high level, but everybody stayed in college for 4 years back then. And so getting guys and recruiting guys who were at the top of the game, their assumption was they were going to be in college for the next 4 years somewhere. So Notre Dame was a great option. If you're a one and done guy, Notre Dame's not the greatest option. You're not going to live in some cushy apartment and take online classes. You're going to live in a dorm and you're going to go to class every day. And that's not necessarily what one and done guys are looking for out of that experience, right? They're looking for something different. So Mike's had to navigate that in a league where you look at what, you know, Duke's got a new roster every year. And Mike Bray just keeps trying to keep his guys old every year. You know, he wants as many fourth and fifth year guys as he can get to stick around and become the best version of themselves. Not many of those guys end up in the NBA, but they're all good basketball players by the time they leave. And Mike's been able to do an awful lot with guys like that. So I think just for people to understand that he has done a really good job. Every job is not the same. You know, you don't measure Mike Krzyzewski and Mike Bray the same way, because their two institutions are so completely different in the way they are doing, you know, everything in terms of admissions and one and dones and all that kind of stuff. It's just not the same thing. So, you know, you have to evaluate a guy based on the job he has. Mike has, I think, done a terrific job in the job he has. I'm happy for him that, you know, I'd love to see him go out with a blaze here at the end of this season. They've struggled this year, but Mike is always, one thing he's always done is figured out his teams before it was over. And I'm, you know, still hopeful that's going to happen with him this year.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I got to go back in a day. Like, so you talk about four-year guys, Notre Dame basketball. I still remember David Rivers when I was growing up, and I got to know Kelly Trpiuka a little bit through, you know, his son Jake playing lacrosse, and got to know Kelly at, you know, some Under Armour events, which your cousin Lee runs those. It's now been rebranded. I think it's the Reebok All-American, but through the All-American events. So, yeah, I remember those guys back in the day. And the one camera angle on their on the basketball court for their games. That was good times.
Yeah, a little different all around, but man, I mean, Kelly played on terrific teams, right? I mean, those, you know, Orlando Woolridge and those guys that they had back in that time were terrific. But again, it's hard to recruit those highest level guys now because they're looking for a whole different thing. But yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
All right. Dixie and I love to talk about food, and we know you're a food guy too. So this is a really important question, most important question of the entire interview. Someone's coming from out of town. What restaurant do you send them to? In South Bend, where do you send them? Where are you sending them?
Well, it depends on what they're looking for, you know. I mean, if they're looking for, you know, like a just great kind of dive burger place, there are a couple of great places, you know, the View and CJ's and you know, but if they're looking for high end stuff, LaSalle Grill and Cafe Navarre probably, you know, are two best restaurants in town, I think. And then you got the, you know, Ruth's Chris and the chain kind of things. But I like going local with this stuff. I try to stay with the people here, doing it on the ground in South Bend. You know,
love it.
Dan's the high end guy. If it's not black tie, it's not for him.
Yeah, sure. So, the top hat, man. If I don't have it, right. Yeah. But if you're not served and with white gloves, it's not for me. for my wife, I should say. Wings and beer is fine with me. Coach, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Best of luck to you and the Fighting Irish in 2023.
Thanks,
y'all.
Great to be with you.
It was really good to talk to Coach Corrigan, Dix.
It was. We've never had him on the show before. And when we were talking about our first show, when we broke bread last week.
Yes.
At the Columbia Ale House. Shout out to Stata Nachos. You were kind of like, well, Notre Dame doesn't play first weekend. Like, why do you want to get Coach Corrigan? And, I, we've never had him before. And two, I don't know if he's given any – he may have, we just missed it, but I don't know if he's given any extended interviews since they didn't make the NCAA tournament last year. And he, you know, he wasn't very elaborate on it, but, you know, you could tell it stung and didn't sit well with his lacrosse team.
Yeah. And you know, I liked his answer. You're sad for the seniors that their career, right, the expectations of the program is to make the NCAA tournament every year. And I think they have made it for 15 straight years. And when that opportunity is not there, that's not how you want your seniors to go out, the Arden Cohens and the Jack of Voices and et cetera on the team. So real sad about that, but move on. You know, this is a different team, a different year. I saw an article, then Christian Sweezy had interviewed John Donowski, that's on Inside Lacrosse, and he says the same thing, like, new group of guys, new season, let's move on and not focus on the past. We're ready to win this championship here.
And when you think about Notre Dame, and hopefully we have some younger listeners that might not know or appreciate the history of Notre Dame lacrosse, back in the late 80s, early 90s, they were basically like gifted an NCAA tournament berth because that Midwest berth. Michigan State got one at one time, but Notre Dame was consistently that Midwest team. I can remember we played them at Hopkins in 92 in the NCAA first round, beat them, 15-6-7, something like that. But people did not like the fact that they were getting that automatic berth, but that helped pave the way for the success that we see with Notre Dame these days. Denver, Air Force, Utah, all those programs out west, that automatic berth enabled that sport to grow at the collegiate level. And obviously it's taken off at the youth and high school level in that area of the country.
Usually, listeners, we always interview a coach who's playing in one of the marquee games of the week. The last two seasons, to kick off the season, we had a doctor talking in 2021 when there was concern about whether fans could still watch games and the protocols.
Shout out Roger Blumenthal, just saw him the other day. His son Russ, ready to man the pipes, I think one more season.
Oh, for the Dragons, the Drexel Dragons, he's back?
Yeah. And I say, I think one more season because my head's still spinning with all this COVID stuff and the extra year and all that kind of thing. But yeah, Roger was a guest a couple years ago.
And then last year we kicked off the season with Brian Abbott, who's head of chief official in Nailoa, talk about some of the rule changes and things like that. So as we were looking to start this season, you suggested Coach Corrigan. And I was like, okay, why? But that was a really thoughtful interview. And I think the fact that he didn't have to play a game this week, he was able to give us a lot of his time and thought. And I really enjoyed it. And I don't know if you could see this at home. You couldn't see this at home, but he had a comfortable fireplace in the background of his.
It looked very cozy.
It did. It did.
Very cozy.
It was cold and cloudy in South Bend, but it was a fireside chat with Coach Corrigan.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Dix. There are real live college lacrosse games this week that count, including a pair of D1 debuts for Lindenwood and Queens. Really cool historical moments for those two programs. Let's get to the game previews. First game I want your opinion on, Dix. At noon in Annapolis, Mount St. Mary's will take on the Navy Midshipmen. Mount won that game in a surprise upset last year. Navy's an improved team. What do you see happening on Saturday?
A lot of young, really good, young players for Navy, and they have to have the memory of losing last year to the Mountaineers on their home field, right? It was in Annapolis, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm friends with a couple of the parents of the Navy team, and I spoke with a couple of them this week, and they're nervous. They're like, oh, man, you you couple last year, and you look at their roster. Mount St. Mary's got a really nice team. They got some young talent. Bonafide, some graduate transfers, they're going to make their team different. So they're well aware, of Mount St. Mary's capability, and Tom Gravanti does such a great job. With Navy, what I'm looking at, especially in this early season, Xavier Arline is going to play both football and lacrosse. It's hard, especially in a place like Navy, where pretty much everything that you do is all in. And with Xavier Arline, for as talented as he is, he showed us flashes last year, but he's still living both lives of football and lacrosse. And I believe the understanding is that if there's a conflict between the two, football wins out. How will his teammates see that? You know, when those guys are fully vested in lacrosse, and then you have a guy who has to step out to take football reps or go to football meetings or go to football lifts or whatever, like, how is that going to affect the dynamic and the chemistry of the team? That's a question mark, I think. And I think it's fair. And but when you look at, you know, Skowniak back in the midfield, and they're very high on a freshman, Mac Haley, who's probably going to be the quarterback of their offense. Defensively, Jackson Bonnets is terrific. Maybe, you know, definitely an All-American type player, but also the kind of guy that could end up being like Defensive Player of the Year in the Patriot League. You know, that's how good he is. So this Navy team is very, you know, is looking to take some steps forward this year in 23.
Well, the second game involves Navy's arch rival, who lost some marquee talent from their team and is really rebuilding, when number 15, St. Joseph's, travels to West Point to take on the Army West Point at 1 o'clock. Your thoughts?
Well, how about, you know, we're going to talk about a couple games here today that are like role reversal, right? So Army's going to be an underdog in this game, when probably the last 10 years Army would be the favorite against the Hawks. But this is St. Joe's team coming off of their first ever NCAA tournament appearance. One of the best faceoff men in the country, and Zach Cole, to get them possession after possession. A lot of people feel like St. Joe's is ranked too low to begin the preseason. When you talk about Army, Brendan Nechtern was just such a terrific player at West Point for the last few years. He is, you know, he's graduated along with some other offensive weapons that they had. I thought they really adjusted pretty well last year after Marcus Hudgens didn't play all season long. This will be a really interesting game. How does St. Joe's handle being the favorite in this game against an Army team that, you know, I'm sure that Coach Alberisi has pointed out that, you know, you guys are not ranked in the preseason. St. Joe's is. What are you going to do about it?
The next game is the biggest game of the weekend. Only matchup featuring two top 20 teams. Number 20, Richmond, at number 2, Maryland, defending champs. That game's at 1 o'clock in College Park.
So the defending champion, the Maryland Terrapins, just an unbelievable storybook, really. 2022, perfect season, national championship, Tewaraton winner, you name it. But they are without their four short stick D middies that graduated. They are without Logan Wisnowskis, Keegan Kahn, Jonathan Donville, Eric Mulliver, not playing this season due to an injury suffered in the fall. But this Maryland team, all the reports coming out of their scrimmage against Duke and their scrimmage against Georgetown says this is still a very deep team. They might not be as top heavy as they have in the past. It's probably going to be a more defensive oriented team. They're going to get to win a lot of possessions with Luke Weirman, Brett Makar on the defense, Zapatello. I think Logan McNaney is not only maybe one of the most underrated players in the country. I think he might be the best goalie in the country. When you consider, you know, last year in that national final against Cornell, I thought he made 5, 6, 7 saves in that first quarter that really kept Cornell off balance when Maryland wasn't as sharp. So the Terps are still loaded. And definitely a national championship contender. They're going up against a Richmond team that loses some firepower offensively. Ryan Lanchberry is gone. Luke Fracchini, Ryan Dunn has graduated. So that's three of their top four scorers have graduated and are gone. I had the opportunity to watch Richmond play last weekend. They got off to a slow start against Loyola. Then they kind of found their groove a little bit. Jared Chinoy, a solid faceoff man. They do return Dalton Young, 62 points a year ago. So this will be a good early test for the Maryland Terrapins.
Move out to the mountains. Utah at number 17, Denver at 2 o'clock.
Utah seems to be a team that is a sexy pick this year to be a dark horse or a spoiler. And I know the next game we're going to talk about, I think, is Jacksonville Hopkins. When you talk about the Utes, they are a legitimate contender to win that Atlantic Sun, with joining Jacksonville in that conference. So, they are trending upward for sure. Got to play Denver, though. And that team is going to be juiced for Bill Tierney's final season opener. Denver played Hopkins last weekend in a scrimmage. It was low scoring. But Denver still has that very crisp offense, sharing the ball. So Utah absolutely is going to have to be really buttoned up on the defensive end. It should be a good one. Where's that game being played? Is that at Denver?
It's at Denver.
At Denver, Peter Barton. So, one of the most underrated venues in college lacrosse in terms of fan support and atmosphere and that kind of thing. So that'll be a good game.
And then our last game on Saturday, the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays on the road at nationally ranked number 18 Jacksonville, 7 o'clock on Saturday evening. Dix, if I were to ask you, let's say a 25, 30-year-old Mark Dixon, that Hopkins season opener would be at Jacksonville, you would have said, no way. Jacksonville has to come to Homewood Field to play the Blue Jays. We will never go down there. And then if I told you that Hopkins would be the underdog, the unranked team in this matchup, you would not have believed me. And here we are.
I would think the sky was falling, but Jacksonville, we always, for the last couple of years, we've talked about, when can they make that next step? Well, they made that next step last year, beating Duke, beating Denver, just some really nice wins for that Dolphin team under John Galloway. And our friend Ray Carnicelli, I was on his radio show last week, and I was like, yeah, that's a night game, right? And he goes, yeah, it's a night game, 7 o'clock. It's being billed as a beach party. There's a men's league that is having like some type of tournament jamboree or whatever throughout the day. So you're going to have those guys there in addition to the student body that's going to be all juiced up. This is going to be a really lively atmosphere in Jacksonville. And I mean, the only blue and black that you might see are going to be on the Hopkins players and the Hopkins parents. It's going to be probably a sea of green and white. So should be a great atmosphere. And, Jacksonville's a team. Dylan Watson, a great finisher from Georgetown, is back. Max Waldbaum has been injured. Didn't play last weekend in a scrimmage against North Carolina. What's his health status in this contest? Luke Milliken is a terrific goaltender. And that is a big question mark for Hopkins. Who's going to start a goal for the Blue Jays? Tim Marcio got the start last weekend against Denver, played a half. So is he the guy? And really, the biggest news, I think, for Hopkins has been the addition to the coaching staff of John Crawley, 2017 graduate. He's now the offensive coordinator. Brian Kelly, teammate of mine, graduated in 93. Longtime coach at Goucher, is now the volunteer assistant. I'm definitely going to try to stream this bad boy for sure. Cause I think it's going to be a good game, and I think it's going to be a really, terrific atmosphere.
I can't wait to see it. And it's February, Dix, and we're playing lacrosse games. So you're going to be shocked to know that there's a game that I want to talk about that was supposed to take place in New England this Saturday. That's going to be already been moved to Sunday afternoon. And it involves the previously mentioned Bobby Benson against his predecessor as the offensive coordinator at Maryland. They'll face each other when Holy Cross plays at Providence at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Hey, there was an NBA game. We're recording this on Thursday. There was an NBA game last night that was postponed due to an ice storm at Detroit. The Wizards and the Pistons were. So lacrosse isn't exclusive to Mother Nature. But look, Bobby Benson and J.L. Reppert, the last two offensive coordinators for the University of Maryland going to be squaring off against each other. Crusaders are looking to improve on a, you know, what, you know, pretty disappointing 2022 season. A lot of people feel like Providence is one of those programs that fits the bill of like a sleeping giant, and they could really go to higher levels. And now Bobby Benson's in charge of that program. I do want to take a moment. I think, you know, obviously our first podcast of the season, and express our condolences to the family, to J.L. Reppert and his family on the loss of his wife, and the mother of his son. Our hearts are with J.L. And I know there was, you saw the generosity of the lacrosse community when there was a GoFundMe page set up, and I can't remember what the goal was. Let's say it was $50,000. I mean, I think that thing hit like $250,000, $300,000. But it's, a game is being ready to be played on Sunday. And I think right now this game, without knowing a whole lot about the teams, you might call it a pick 'em, and we'll see how it goes.
All exciting action. Make sure you tune in, find where these games are being streamed, and go find them. Oh, speaking of streams, Dix, doing some games. You got your broadcast schedule. I think ESPN has come out with theirs. The Big Ten Network hasn't publicly gone out with it, but you expect to be back doing games for the Big Ten Network primarily, correct?
So I'll be with both ESPN and the Big Ten Network this year. I have gotten a couple of games from ESPN. I don't want to publicly say them just right now in case I'm supposed to keep that under wraps, but I will have a busy February. And yes, I will be back with BTN as well. Again, talking with my leadership over at that network, I have an idea of what games I'll be on, but schedule hasn't been officially announced. So therefore I can't announce, or say anything, but I'm excited. I'm excited for the new season. This will be my 20th year on television, believe it or not, 20 years on TV, wow. 20 years.
Congratulations.
I mean, you can remember me when I had more hair and more color and, wasn't as salt and peppery and, what?
You had less knowledge and wisdom back then.
More hair, okay. I thought you meant I have less wisdom and knowledge now.
I'm losing
everything.
Oh, congratulations. I have noticed, looking at some of the schedules of Big Ten teams, that there are a number of games scheduled for Sunday evenings or Sundays. And that's always a highlight. Those Big Ten Sunday night games, love them. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. So this is a music-oriented one. My wife, Amy, was watching, there's a new Pamela Anderson documentary or something on Netflix.
I heard that is a train wreck.
I was reading a book while this was on. I had to keep telling Amy to turn it down.
You're reading
but
a book.
I couldn't help but watch it. Because it brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Well, that's just like as humans, how we consume pop culture and information is so different now than it was 25 or 30 years ago. And I forgot how monumental the Tommy Lee romance and like the tabloidness of it was. But it spurred me to the other night when I was making dinner to listen to some Motley Crue.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it spurred you to look up the tape.
No. She makes it clear. Her sons are talking about it. And I'm like, it's worth watching. If you were a fan, you should watch. But so listen to some Crue. And man, what a great band. Like really good
unbelievable
band. So here is your task. I'm going to drop these names into the chat so you can see them. You're going to rank these 80s hair band frontmen from, I'm giving you six names. Now I picked these. I looked up, I thought of this task for you. I Googled, did some internet research about what is technically considered an 80s hair band. Some of these, 90s, 70s. And there's certain guys I left off the list on purpose. There's certain, like some bands that I don't technically consider hair bands. I even asked my wife, I said, give me the name of some 80s hair bands. And she went down and listed a bunch. And then there might be bands that are more famous than maybe some of these guys were in. These are pretty famous bands. But if I couldn't name the lead singer off the top of my head, or I didn't think other people would. For instance, I love, so here are the names. Vince Neil of Motley Crue, Bret Michaels of Poison, Sebastian Bach from Skid Row, John Bon Jovi from Bon Jovi, Joe Elliott from Def Leppard, Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses. I wasn't going to include Guns N' Roses, but my wife insisted that I did too. Okay. I always see them as more of like a rock and roll band, like a blues band kind of. Mm-hmm. Most people would think that, and you got to put him in there. And I wasn't going to include Bon Jovi because my wife, that's her all time favorite. And I didn't want to, but she said,
ladies love John Bon Jovi.
He's got to be in there. So I said, okay, I'll put him in there. And also his career has been long, and you know, he's outlived all of these other guys really as like, you know, still being a star and some other stuff. But those are the six: Vince Neil, Bret Michaels, Sebastian Bach, John Bon Jovi, Joe Elliott, Axl Rose. You know, I was a big fan of Cinderella, but not many people know like Tom Kiefer, you know,
Philadelphia guy, right?
Yeah. I thought of Kix.
Oh, God. You know? Well, they're Hagerstown.
Yeah.
Maryland.
And Steve Whiteman is their lead singer. But I was like, yeah, Dixie might not know him, or no. Listeners might. But I think our listeners know all of these bands and they can picture each of these guys
in
their
sure.
head without having to see it. So can you give me your list of how you would rank them? Now, it's up to you how you rank them, but I kind of want, if you were starting a band, who would you draft first? So think of, you know, their singing ability. Did they help writing the songs? Can they play an instrument? You know, what's their musical ability? You know, there's one particular guy who has shown a lot of business acumen and some other things, you know, so maybe you'd want him in your band. So those six famous frontmen from the 80s, I want to hear your list.
This is easy.
And
so a couple bands that I would have included, or, you know, think to include: Quiet Riot, Kevin DeBrell. That was one of my first albums, Metal Health.
Yeah.
It was one of my first albums.
Yeah. Okay.
That one, Warrant, Janie Lane.
Yeah.
I was thinking Warrant's a pretty good band. But no, this is a good list.
And okay. Kip Winger from Winger.
Oh God. Beavis and Butthead with the Winger.
No, the other one I was thinking of is
what about, Metallica, James Hetfield, would they count as a hero?
That's like new rock.
It's
more 90s the way I look at them. For some reason.
Paul Stanley of Kiss.
Kiss was like too early.
Okay.
But the other guy was Dee Snider from Twisted Sister,
who
I was thinking about putting in here, but I was like, he's like older maybe than these guys.
Right,
so.
Right.
Let's keep it to these six. I don't want to listen to you too long either.
Number one, Joe Elliott, Def Leppard. I've seen them in concert. He's an incredible showman. He's had a great voice, still has a good voice, and he just strikes me as a cool dude, like a guy that I would want to hang out with.
Have a pint with.
Go to the pub with Joe Elliott, number one. Axl Rose has to be number two, because Guns N' Roses and Metallica are probably my two favorite bands, and Def Leppard. So probably my three favorite bands of all time. But Axl Rose, I mean, when they came on the scene, late 80s, it was like nothing we had ever heard before. He could go high with Welcome to the Jungle. He could go low with Mr. Brownstone. I thought it was two different guys singing those songs.
He also wrote like another level of songs. Like, you know, longer songs. He played
and
the
Joe
piano
Elliott wrote for Def Leppard too.
Yeah.
So I should have thrown that in there. But the problem with Axl is, I mean, he was a real piece of work back in the day. My wife and I saw Guns N' Roses in concert in 2016. He was fantastic. Slash was amazing. So I'm glad that those guys have kind of made peace and gotten back together. Third would be Vince Neil from Motley Crue. Maybe not the greatest voice, but, you know, and he's had a rough life. You know, the car accident that killed his friend that was in Hanoi Rocks, and then, you know, his daughter died, was sick with a brain affliction years ago. But the Crew, I mean, when they first came out, like, they were more like glam rock, you know, because they were androgynous. But I just remember, like, shout at the devil and looks that kill. Like, are these guys really worshiping Satan? And, you know, that kind of things. So they were, like, scary.
Helter
but,
Skelter, Beatles yeah. cover. Really good version.
But that movie, the Netflix movie, The Dirt, that is a great biopic. That. Great biopic. Okay. After that, it's a pretty big drop-off. Bret Michaels is a guy that I think is cool. Like, I think he's a good guy. And he actually, his daughter is a sideline reporter for an NLL team, for an indoor team. And he tweeted a few weeks back that he was going to their game. I'd have to look it up. But so, like, you know, there's points right there for him being, you know, him being a lacrosse fan or, you know, de facto lacrosse fan. Gotta love when he was on Rock of Love back with the VH1, where he was trying to find a girlfriend. But like before The Bachelor, there was Rock of Love and Flavor of Love with Flavor Flav, just absolute nightmare shows, but I couldn't stop watching. But I did. So they opened for Def Leppard when we saw them a few years ago, and I thought Poison sucked, and I thought his voice sucked. And I just, like, it was like the Talk Dirty to Me and Nothing But a Good Time. It's just like, it's lame these days. Sebastian Bach, out of all of these guys, probably has the best voice. Like, I mean, he's an unbelievable vocalist. I'm just not a huge Skid Row fan. But over the years, I have grown to appreciate 18 of Life more and more. That song comes on, it's just like, yeah. And I'm not a Bon Jovi guy. I mean, whatever. You know, I think their music's okay. It's more about John Bon Jovi being cute, you know, and he was on Stern a couple of years ago. He just kind of came across as a jerk a little bit. And like he referred to the albums. He goes, yeah, you know, so when we recorded Slippery, like this is what we did. And when we recorded, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He just strikes me as kind of a goober. So that's okay. My sixth. Joe Elliott, Axl Rose, Vince Neil, Bret Michaels, Sebastian Bach, interchangeable at 4 or 5, John Bon Jovi.
All right, I disagree on just your last, and I put Bon Jovi first.
Of course you did.
Amy, you're
such
welcome.
A Jersey girl.
No, Amy, you're welcome. They're my wife's all-time favorite. But have you ever seen him in concert?
Like, I have not. And that could change. That could change.
Incredible showman. Like, he's really fantastic. And he's the one I was talking about with the business sense. Like, he's owned teams and started a food pantries. And he's just a great human being and a really good musician and songwriter. And, you know, the music is what it is. It's not the greatest. It's not the Beatles kind of work or that deep. But he's
they great. Do have and, anthems, Living on a Prayer.
And- oh,
You Give Love a Bad Name.
Absolutely. You know, the all ones that.
Maybe I have a role. That's perfect. Maybe. But don't all the band members hate him?
No, they all hate Richie Sambora. Richie
was
a
right?
real problem. Yeah. And they'll never play together again. And that's why my wife refuses. She's like, if Richie's not playing guitar for them, I don't want to see them. Because it's not Bon Jovi. You know, they can never really get the band back together.
Gotcha.
I just put him first. So, Amy, you're welcome. I put Axl second. I mean, he was a game-changing type of showman, musician. And again, he took that – he kind of helped lead to the end of the hair bandy metal stuff because he was writing songs on another level, you know, that really changed that genre, maybe even killed that genre. I put Joe Elliott third, Vince Neil, Bret Michaels, and Sebastian Bach last.
Okay. Why Sebastian Bach last and Bret Michaels ahead of him, or the same reason, just not a big Skid Row guy?
Yeah, not a huge Skid Row guy. And I really appreciate, like, Every Rose Has a Thorn. It's one of my favorite songs.
It's like, a good tune.
You know, I play the guitar and stuff. So, like, you bring that out to the right age group of people, everyone knows all the words to it. And it's always, always a banger. People always love it when you play that one. So,
all right.
I got to put that one in there. So, there's my six. All right. That seems like a good place to end. Dix, we went way over. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Notre Dame head coach Kevin Corrigan. Coach, thanks for your time. Best of luck to the Irish in 2023. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. tell a friend and share the love. It's free. It just takes you a second to hit the button. And it helps people find, it helps other lacrosse fans find us if you write a review on your podcast app. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. And I'm simply at QY. And remember, as always, enjoy the
game. That's it. Yeah, I like it.